Hi, everybody. My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. A conversation with Donovan Cross. Hey, everybody. In this episode, I have a conversation with the brand new latest guide to join the Wild Eye team. Donovan Cross has been with us for a whole week now, and in this episode, I sit down to get to know a little bit about him, what his history is, how he got into guiding, what he brings to photography safaris, and a whole bunch more. Hope you guys enjoy this one. So the metric is to do speed, not distance.
That's it. Okay. So eventually run like, I would be super stoked if I could run 1 kilometer like as close to 3 minutes as possible. You know what I mean? Like,
bro.
I won't be able to do that, but you know what I mean?
Like, I run like a brick, so I'm very impressed if you could do that.
No, I can't. No. My quickest time is like 3 minutes, 40 something seconds.
4K. Okay.
It's not that fast. But
I'm trying to measure it against the mile, which was 4 minutes, was a big deal. So what's a good time for a kilometer?
What do you mean? The world record for a kilometer is like 2 minutes 14. That's
right.
The world record. But 4 minutes you need to run quickly, you know. To get to 5 minutes, it's 12 k's an hour. So to get to 4 minutes is quite a bit more.
So where's the running going? Is this going towards a marathon? Is this going towards you competing at something? Or?
No. It's like I said, more just for a healthy lifestyle. And for me, it's like I said, it's nice to do the resistance training and then with that do running so that you can still be a bit more, you know, stocky and fit, not skinny and fit.
Yeah, there's this Hyrox thing. You've seen that?
Yeah, I have seen that.
That looks so, I don't know if I'm gonna offend anybody, but it's almost like CrossFit without the difficult movements, apparently. Like all the advanced lifting and they've stripped it out. So, but too much running for my liking.
Yeah,
I run like a brick. So
no, it's very cardio focused, that.
Yeah. And tell me, so you've been in the Wild Eye office now for how long?
Just over a week.
And thoughts, let's go.
Oh, that's insane. What I really like about it is how everybody knows each other, like, pretty well. I mean, people here know each other's dogs' names, and that's pretty special. So it goes way beyond just the work relationship. It's almost like there's a work and personal relationship with each other at the office, and I really enjoy that. And just exciting, you know, like you hear from everybody their travels, they tell you the stories that they've been, and you're like, oh, come on, can't the 7th of July, which is when I travel for the first time, can't come quicker?
Yeah.
Because I also just want to start telling my own stories, you know. So, it's a really good vibe. Always music playing in the office, it's a vibe.
Yeah. Is it because it's always when you walk into a new space, I mean, and it's both a new space and a new kind of life for you guys. It's you walk in and you had this preconceived idea of what you saw online. I mean, you saw Wild Eye online, you saw me, Andrew, Mike, Johan, the guys online. What is the, almost like Instagram versus reality, what did that compare like?
Yeah, I think initially when I thought Wild Eye was just this photographic company. But getting to this office, it's way more than that. You know, there's a whole logistics team. There's so much going on behind the scenes. It's people. In fact, photography is not something we speak about all the time, even in the office. You know, it's like
Good point.
Yeah, it's not even something we speak about all the time. It's really all the other stuff. It's the, you know, what amazes me as well is how everybody here knows our guest names. Like, it's if you mention a guest name that's traveled in the past, everybody knows who that person is. So that's sort of more what people talk about here. And that's what I didn't expect. I thought I was going to see everybody just sitting on their Macs and editing photos and all of that stuff. No, that's something you almost do in your spare time.
Yeah.
It's a good reality.
What did you do before this? So, because the idea with this is obviously try and get you know a little bit for the audience, but also I think make them want to travel with you. So what's your life before you walked into Wild Eye on the 5th of May?
Yeah, so just before that, let's start from the, after I studied a BCom marketing management degree. And then after that, I joined And Beyond, which is a travel company, but I joined them as a lodge-based guide. So I started off at Pinda Private Game Reserve, and then from there moved over to the Sabi Sands. And I told myself I want to try the head office space. I got married and then I decided, okay, maybe if I want to see my wife more often, you know, as lodge-based guys, you work 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I thought to myself, I want to see my wife more often. So let's maybe, but I want to stay within this industry. I knew that much.
Can I ask, this industry being the travel industry, the photographer industry, the guiding industry, what are we talking about?
The safari industry as a whole. Okay. So traveling, guiding, all of the above, basically, mm-hmm. yeah. So I told myself, well, you know, if I could stick with this company, as it is a pretty big company, being and beyond, and I told myself, okay, let's see what the head office space looks like. Mm. But then when I got there, I almost realized, like, listen, now I'm missing the bush. You mm-hmm. know, like, it's tough to just be now office-based.
Yeah.
So I was sort of looking for a hybrid thing where I could travel a bit more often, but mm-hmm. then also sell safaris, which is what I'm really, really passionate about. Yes. And that's where WildEye came about. But what I did at the head office with and beyond is I was a travel specialist. So I did the selling safaris part, but I didn't do the traveling part as much.
Okay.
So that's what led me here.
How do you sell a safari?
Oh, in actual fact, it's the hardest thing about selling a safari is you only have to sell one.
Yeah.
Once you got that guest going,
sure.
Then it sells itself.
Yeah.
That's how.
Did people come to you, or did you cold call? Did you get leads coming through? What was the structure like?
No, it was leads coming through. So it's people inquiring, asking more questions, just inquisitive minds, and then you sort of just feed that beast. You know, as soon as people become inquisitive, you just sort of tell them why they should be more inquisitive. Mm. So that's sort of
what were some of the most common questions people would ask during that process?
What time is the best time of the year to travel? If I've got a family, where could I take my family? Where is it safe to travel to Africa? I think there's a big stigma around Africa and the rest of the world. So those are the common questions. What kind of animals am I expected to see? How long should I stay at a particular camp?
It's all the standard stuff, eh?
It's all the standard stuff.
Yeah. What do you think? Let's go there. What do you think of the current ecosystem? And we're not going to get deep into politics, but from an American point of view, because for those people out there that have heard me say this in the past, of all of our clientele at WildEye, probably about 70 to 80% is international, so outside of South Africa, coming into Africa or wherever we go. And then of that percentage, probably about another 70 to 80% is from America. How would you, if I'm an American client coming to you and say, listen, I want to come to Africa, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure about my politics, your politics, how it's perceived. How would you deal with that?
Well, first, I'll get rid of the stigma. I'll say, like, listen, you would think that coming to, for example, landing at Johannesburg, everybody knows or thinks that Johannesburg is this unsafe city.
Mm.
I mean, we're sitting in Johannesburg right now, and I drove perfectly fine here this morning.
I feel okay as well, yes.
I feel, yeah, completely okay. So I would get rid of that. I would say, like, there's parts of New York City, for example, that's not safe. There's all over the world, there are parts of cities that are not safe. It doesn't mean the whole Johannesburg is not safe. Mm. So where guests typically would travel, it's safe and secure.
Mm-hmm.
So I would sort of dwell on that fact and let them know, like, listen, you are okay. And also, if you do it through a company like WildEye, you know that you're in good hands, and we will obviously take care of your safety. So it's putting their minds at rest, just to assure them that they'll be fine.
What about, and this is an interesting one, we spoke about this in the office, I think it might just before you came in, before you joined, the idea that, and actually, if anybody from the States is listening, I'd love to hear your feedback on this, is the idea that I've had people, because I was in the States now for a 2.5-3 week trip, spoke to a lot of people, and there's so many people that apologize off the bat. Like, I'm so sorry what's happening to our politics. And I'm like, you know what, I'm in the dark corner of Africa. I don't actually give a shit. It's cool. Whatever. You do you. But I've had people who say they don't want to travel from the States because of how they will be perceived.
But
like, we don't judge people coming in. It's not like we're going to, you know what, you're from that country who did X, Y, and Z. You're not welcome here.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah, and that's, I think I want to go back to the point I made initially, is that's why it's only difficult to sell the first safari, because once people come, especially people from the States, they'll realize how welcoming people are in Africa, not just South Africa, but the Maasai people in Kenya, all of those, even people in Zimbabwe, people tell me, yo, the people are so, so friendly there, and that's often why people return, is for the people.
100%.
Yes, it's safari and it's wildlife, but it's people.
Mm.
And that's why I'm saying, so people, whenever people hesitate to come, that's my job, is to try and convince them to get over that hesitation initially, and once they hear, they realize how special it is.
I think it's a sad thing that the world is in its current state, because if people could understand what a break it is to come on safari, it's like you step into this utopia, this perfect world where everything's done for you, the luxury. I mean, and we can get to that later, but African lodge and hospitality is world class. I've done lodges in Kenya, in Canada, up in Norway, even in the States. We've been to lodges, and Africa crushes. And the people as well. So that stigma of, what are people going to think? We don't care. We just want to do what we do. And that's what I think more people, especially from the States right now, maybe Canada as well, need to understand is, you know what, leave it behind. Come here, we'll show you a lion in a good time, and it's amazing. It really is. There's no judgment from our side at all.
No, I agree with you. It's just the way it is.
Strange reality, man. What is on your list of places you still want? No, let's back up. What are some of the coolest reserves and or countries you visited in the past, and why?
Oh, another thing is, it's such a difficult question because each country in Africa, they could border each other or not. Mm. They are so different from one another. Mm. So, I mean, we once did a whole massive road trip through Namibia and we went from the south to the north and back to the south. Yeah. And that was spectacular.
Oh, the country's amazing.
And then the country neighboring Namibia, Botswana, is just as amazing, but so, so different.
Yeah.
So I would personally say my favorite safari destination that I visited would be Botswana, especially the Okavango Delta, mm-hmm. Just because it feels so unbelievably wild. You get there, you don't see other people too often. It's super exclusive. And obviously that just how the animals interact within that delta, you know, seeing those wild dogs chase the lechwes through the water, it's just, you need to see it for yourself to realize how special it is.
Yeah.
And then obviously, even places like Zimbabwe, super remote, you feel so far away from the world's problems. Mm. And I think that's what's so amazing about visiting these kind of places.
Yeah.
But I would say my favorite safari destination will be Botswana.
Yeah.
But then obviously you also can't take South Africa out of that picture just because it's so beautiful to do like Cape Town and then Kruger National Park on the other side. So, but Botswana.
It spins back to that question of how do you help people to come on safari, because we'll get the questions, for example, and this, it's funny at first instance, but it just shows how people need guidance, is can we do the Masai Mara on a day trip to Cape Town? You can try, it's not going to work. Or people would come to, for example, Mala Mala and Sabi Sabi and say, can we do a day trip to see the gorillas? And it's challenging because these are countries apart, but it shows you how that information that we share with people makes it possible, that they understand what it's about. And that's what you mentioned, is every single destination has its own thing. Whatever the thing is. I mean, the thing is the delta, the thing is the dunes, the thing is the Great Migration. But the people are also so different. Mm. What made you go to guiding in the first place?
Actually, Jerry, it's such a funny thing because, what got me to guiding, first, I didn't know that there was an industry like this. Mm. I thought, you know, I just didn't realize that private game reserves were a thing when I was younger, because my parents used to take us to Kruger National Park on self-drive safaris. Yeah. And then when I was 15 years old, that was the first time they actually took us to a luxury camp within a greater Kruger National Park. So we went to the Timbavati.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I saw a ranger and a tracker in action. And I thought to myself, how on earth are these guys getting paid to track a pride of lions? Like, how on earth is that their job? I mean, that is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
So I immediately went to, after that holiday, we were there for, I think, 4 nights. Uh-huh. After that, I told my parents, listen, I need to do this. This is the coolest thing in the world. If that is a job, then I want it.
Yeah, it's like getting paid to be on holiday.
Yeah, it literally is what it is. So they said it was okay, but being the responsible people that they are, they said, I must first go to university and get a degree, which is what I did. And then after that, I told them, they said, do you still want to do guide after this? I was like, I want to guide even more now. So then straight after university, I went to guiding. But it's funny, while I was studying, and I don't often tell this story, but I drove a little Polo, which is, for people that might not know, it's just a small little hatchback car.
Sure.
And I studied in a small university town in South Africa called Potchefstroom. And there was a dirt road that went next to like some game farms, some commercial game farms. Mm-hmm. And I remember literally, if I had free spare time, I would drive super slow on that dirt road with my little Polo just to see what wildlife I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, all I would see is like a few antelope and that's it. But it was such, I almost pretended like I was on a safari taking people out. That's how badly I wanted it while I was still studying.
What's the coolest thing you saw on those drives?
I saw a guinea fowl that was stuck in the fence. And it was just stuck. It couldn't get out. And as I got closer, the next thing, this jackal, blackback jackal, just came out of nowhere and just absolutely smashed it next to the fence. So I thought, I actually saw a kill on one of those drives. Can you believe that?
So are we going to plan safaris back to where you all started from, driving up and down the main road there?
Oh, I wouldn't suggest it. But yeah, that's where it all started for me.
What's your first memory of being on safari? I thought about this earlier this morning as well, just kind of thinking about this, is I'm trying to remember what, for me as a kid, what was the first moment, and mine will probably be in the Kruger, like as a 5, 6, 7 year old going to Pretorius Corpus, Kakuza, whatever it was. What's your first memory of safari?
This is so funny that you said it, because I typed it in my blog that I wrote yesterday.
I didn't know this yet, so that's interesting.
So what happened is we were in a small little reserve not far from Johannesburg called Mabalingwe. It's just a small little reserve, no cats or anything really in that area. But I remember I had a banana. I was 5 years old. I had a banana in my hand, and I did something naughty in the house, and I was almost like chased out in a way. So I sat on the patio and I had my banana, but I haven't opened it yet. And the next thing is, as I wanted to, I looked at my parents, but I was sort of looking away from my banana, and this vervet monkey jumped down and grabbed this thing out of my hand and sort of shot up in this tree above me and then started eating it. So that would be my first memory of any wild animal. But yeah, I also have lots of memories going to Kruger. So I was, like I said, I was pretty fortunate enough in our September school holidays. My parents took us to Kruger every single year, to Letaba Rest Camp to be specific. And I've got so many memories.
Have you been back to Kruger recently?
Oh, as often as I can. My wife is from Nelspruit, which is a town quite close to Kruger National Park.
That's where Johan and Julia are from?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Johan at least, yeah.
So she grew up there. So my parents-in-law still live there. So we often visit them, and then we'll just do a weekend or a week in Kruger. So very often. I do prefer the north, though.
Tell me why.
Because Kruger National Park, I mean, rightly so, it's such a popular place. And apparently, like, the cat density is more in the south. And that's what people mostly want to see on safari is the cats. So all the people that self-drive go to the south of the reserve to hope to see lions or leopards and things like that. Where the north of the Kruger, I find, is way more scenic.
Those forests up there is just amazing.
The forests are unbelievable. And up there, it's a lot less crowded with vehicles. And the bird life is unbelievable. And that's what I'm sort of after now. You know, after you've been on so many safaris, you start looking at different kind of things. And birding for me is a massive thing. So I love the north of Kruger in terms of birding. Yep.
Do you keep a bird list?
I do.
Where are you at?
I'm currently on 547.
Okay. What's your latest lifer that you got on that list?
I actually saw a Cape Rock jumper on our most recent trip to... We went to Mossel Bay about three weeks ago, and we drove through Meiringspoort. And we actually just went on a little walk to a waterfall.
Were you birding, or it just happened?
No, it just happened. I was with my wife, and she's never been to Meiringspoort, so we stopped, and I told her I knew there's a little walk to get to a waterfall there. And we started walking, and I've obviously memorized the call of that bird for so many times, because it's a bird that sort of evaded me. I've went to go look for it in the past, and I couldn't find it. And then literally on this walk, I remember I heard it, and it was quite high up on a cliff, so we saw it from a super far distance, but I had binoculars, and I did confirm it.
Check. Nice. Do you play birdle?
No.
Do you know about Birdle?
I do know about Birdle, but I don't play it, no. Yeah.
For those people listening, so Wordle started apparently in COVID, where the New York Times, on their website, you can go and then you get like six chances or something to put a word in, or five letters, and then you win, whatever the case is. And more recently, I think Emma and Al, someone in the office, was playing Birdle. So when I was in the US now, Laurie, my client, and I would sit every morning. She does Wordle. I can't do it because my OCD is just too much. I cannot. I will stare at that screen until it breaks, right? So it's like, so we also did Birdle, the South African version, which we had to intermediate, or I don't remember. But then also you have to choose what it eats, what the feet is, and then you can choose a name. It's actually a lot of fun. Then we started doing the US version. So it was interesting to see, because then you can blur the picture less. And then if you hear the call, you kind of work backwards. Okay, cool. This call sounds more like a predator, so let's do da-da-da-da-da. It's good fun. So for those people who haven't checked that out, Birdle, interesting thing.
Yeah, it is a cool app.
Where did photography start?
So when I started at Pinda, obviously I that's the first time I actually saw people with these massive lenses and things, and especially birding guests as well. They came with these, because Pinda is one of the most productive birding spots in South Africa. A lot of people came for birding, literally bird only game drives, and then also bird photographers, which is a different kind of beast. It's quite a difficult thing to photograph, especially those small little pink throated twin spots that's about the size of a human's palm. That's the first time I actually saw people started using these things, and I thought to myself, okay, that's something I could get into. Like, I actually then had a little small little Canon camera that's like just, you know, a fixed lens that's sort of a Mückendrick.
Point and pray.
Yeah, that's what I had. And I actually used it eventually as binoculars. You know, if there's a bird super far, you can zoom in with that and just sort of identify the bird. Yeah. It's obviously a very, very blurry photo, but you could at least identify what bird it was. And then when I moved over to the Sabi Sands, There's the wildlife in the Sabi Sands. I mean, it speaks for itself. Mm. It's unbelievable. And so many people, photographers came to the Sabi Sands to sort of capture leopards and lions and things. And that's when it really started for me. I then thought to myself, I'm going to invest in a nice camera. So mm-hmm. I got myself a Nikon mirrorless camera. And that's when it started happening. I YouTubed how to use this thing that I now have and sort of taught myself. And the rest is history. From there, once that bug bites, you know, it doesn't release. So so now I'm so, I love it.
Yeah. So what gear are you currently on? Camera and lenses? What?
I use a Nikon Z5 with, I've got 150 to 600 lens.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an F-mount lens, so I still have a FDZ converter on. But that's what I currently mostly use, yeah.
What's your perfect world lens? What is, if money is no object, what are you shooting with?
Probably a 2.8 fixed lens, just to the crispness on those lenses is just ridiculous. Yeah. So probably that.
It's an interesting thing because the change from DSLRs over to mirrorless, initially the call was, oh no, it's going to be so much smaller.
Yeah.
So it's going to be so much smaller. So then Canon, Nikon was slow off the start initially with the whole thing. They've caught up nicely. But initially, the cell was, it's so much smaller.
Mm.
But looking, I mean, I've got clients now, Ingen, thinking specifically of Ingen, he would arrive and he has a 600 and a 400 and a 7200. It's exactly the same size as everything else. So that's kind of gone away. But it's I don't think I've seen a DSLR on a trip for a while. Some people bring it as a backup, but they never use it.
Mm.
But the tech has made incredible things possible. Hey?
I think what's amazing for me personally, I started off with a mirrorless camera. What really helped me is the fact that you in screen can see the changes you make. You know, as you change your settings, you can actually see what you're doing live.
Yeah.
And as a beginner photographer at that stage, that really helped me develop because you know with the DSLR you have to take, but you don't really know, was it my ISO that was incorrect, or was it my shutter speed? What was it that sort of made my picture look like what it is? But with the mirrorless, you can actually change it all and then see what makes the
Do you think it's made photographers lazy from an understanding point of view? Because we educate a lot in the field. And I've wondered that exact thing because it's great. Overexposed, underexposed, you can see where the highlights are popping, whatever. Do you think it makes people lazy?
I do think so. Because obviously with DSLR, you have to do more research. You have to trial and error more. And that's where you learn. So then you'll have a deeper understanding. I think a mirrorless, you don't really have to understand why it's changing things because you can just change stuff. And
yeah, you can see it is changing.
You can see it is changing. You don't really have to understand why. Mm. So I think there's if you start off with a DSLR, you'll have a broader, more in-depth knowledge of why you're changing your settings.
I think it's also intent. A lot of photographers that, and I look at this as, and you'll see on the photo safaris as well, there's a huge amount of people that come on trip after trip after trip. And after 17 trips, if you're still asking, what should my aperture be? What should my exposure be? Maybe you need to look in the mirror and just say, listen, I don't understand what I'm doing here.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people started getting into the knowledge base and kind of understanding with DSLR, do this, overexpose, bracket, whatever it might be. And then mirrorless came along and they would say, do I under or overexpose here? No, let's underexpose by 1.3. Why? So we protect the highlights, we drop the shadows into black, and you get a nice low-key kind of, whatever the case is, right? But they know that if they turn this dial, the picture goes darker, but they don't know why. And they don't know what the cost is. What is the cost? Because every setting you make has a cost. If you take your ISO up, you can get a faster shutter speed, but you might introduce noise. If you open up your aperture, you might get a flatter background, but you might not have something in focus. So there's always the cost element. And I think a lot of people now, most people are on mirrorless. I just think people have to be more intentional about understanding what they're doing because the more you know, the better it gets.
No, sure. And the more fun you'll have. And the more I've often felt, you know, you learn so much from photography as well by helping others. So if you have that in-depth knowledge and you could help someone next to you, you'll also learn a heck of a lot more.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
It's an interesting thing from a teaching point of view because to learn something new, and I can't remember whose rule this is, but it's the whole thing about if you read something, there's X amount of retainment. If you do it yourself, there's like double the case. And if you try and teach it to someone else, then there's even more.
Mm.
And that's always great with these kind of things because you have all three. You read about it, you do it yourself, and you're helping people out. What do you think? This is a how long is a piece of string question, but what do you think is the one thing that majority of photographers who would come on our trips can do in order to be better?
Well, I would think...
If you have five, give me five.
No, it's obviously, I would think come with a with a goal, but so sort of know what you want in terms of, do you want to focus on landscape photography? Do you want to focus on close up shots of animals? You know, but I mean, when I mean close up, I mean literally the eye of the lion, not just
like a face photo.
But so I would think come with preconceived ideas, but also then be flexible because obviously things happen out in the bush that's unpredictable and you can't always get those shots. So I would say that. And then obviously we're also there in the field to help with those things. But if you have a good idea and you can sort of tell us where you sort of need help or need assistance, then I think that could help a lot and also speed up the process of you getting the shot that you really want.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of things that's pretty easy to understand that people often overlook is the composition, where to place that subject. So that's something obviously we'll help out in the field as well. But but that makes or breaks a photo. You could have the perfect light, but if you put that animal in the center where it should have been in the rule of thirds, then that'll ruin your shot.
It reads wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how the craft of photography, so you've got the obsession about gear, you've got the obsession about the technical side. So the gear thing is almost a pissing contest for some people. I've got the 400-28, you only have the 300-28, I win. Yeah. Whatever, cool, man. Then you've got the technical side of it, which is quantifiable. We can say, right, 1/1600 ISO, 1/1600 shutter speed with the f2.8 gives me this. So it becomes something where people can bump heads and argue, yeah, but it should be this, it should be this. What is that? It becomes a sole focus. And then there's the creative side, which is how do you deploy the technical variables creatively and how do you compose? And I think if people unpack for themselves why they do this, if you're doing this because you have a cool, shiny camera, good on you, have a great trip. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well done. But which of those things mean something and they over-index from there? I'm on your Instagram, which is just straight up Donovan Cross.
Yes.
We'll put this in the description of the episode as well. How would you describe your own photography?
Yeah, like there's always...
You can just say amazing.
No, it's... to be honest with you, Jerry, I've always... My photography has always been kind of personal to me that I haven't shared. I've got so many photos and that's not on Instagram, you know what I mean? Like that I've got in my Lightroom folder that I'm editing and all of that, but I haven't shared it yet. I'm very excited to now start sharing it. That's also part of the reason why I joined Wild Eyes, to sort of push me more to sort of start sharing on social media. So I'm excited for that. But the kind of photos that I enjoy taking is sort of photos that tell a story. And I'm sure most photographers will say that. But for me personally is that interaction. Try and capture that interaction. So if there's, for example, a mother leopard with a cub, you know, try and not just get them both in one shot. Try and sort of get the emotion, capture the emotion when that cub is looking at mom or looking back at you, nervous of you being close or whatever. So that's the kind of things that I try and capture. I remember there's one photo on my Instagram with the cheetah that's sort of stretching on a mound, and that photo is very personal to me because it's
a nice sky behind it. My goodness,
that's where why it's such a special memory to me is I remember we had guests. This happened at Pinda. That exact photo, I was on Pinda, and what happened is we had guests that really wanted to see cheetah. They were only there for 3 days, so our time was limited. And this was their last night, and we haven't seen a cheetah yet.
Okay.
And what then happened is a storm was coming in. As you could see in that picture in the background, there's like a massive storm coming in.
Yeah.
And I told these guests, where people found cheetah, and I said, we are far away. We can get there, but you must know when we come back. And I mean, on Pinda, the vehicles have no roof, so you completely open. Yeah. So I told them, listen, we're going to get drenched, but it might be worth it. Let's go. And they were also keen photographers, so they said, let's go. So we raced. We absolutely flew there and eventually got there. And the light, it was the kind of light where the sun is shining on the one side and there's a storm brewing in from the other side.
It's some just of the best light ever.
Perfect, perfect light. And then... those cheetahs actually got up after that and then disappeared. And we then, I told the guests, listen, we're probably about 45 minutes away from the lodge and this storm is now coming.
Cover your gear. Here we go.
Cover your gear. Let's race. And actually, as we started driving away, 5 minutes into the drive back, it started pouring with rain. But then more than that, it actually started hailing. And I actually remember a piece of hail hit me on the chin and I actually had to go get stitches. That's how bad it was. So it was really a big, bad storm. But the guests got some unbelievable photos, and that's why it's, again, I share that photo, not because it's the best photo in the world, but because it's such a special memory. And that's sort of what my photography is to me. It's special memories that I share.
I do think what you said there is the direction that the photographic safari industry is going or should be going. I remember, I can go back on my Instagram. I can swipe 412 times, stop, And more than likely, I'll be able to look at an image, tell you where it was, not just Kenya, but at Majichafu, just on the northern side of the drainage line, with which guest and everything around it. Mm. And that's where, and I'm a broken record for saying this, but you cannot judge the success of any photo safari by the images you get. It's about what you did now. It's about the deeper meaning, the experiences that came with it. Mm. Because there's this, and this might be a very silly analogy, but if you average it out, 1/1,000th shutter speed, right? Yeah. So let's say over a week safari, you do 4,000 of those images, right? You have 4 seconds of photography. What about the rest of the time?
Yeah.
What are we doing the rest? Fire, meet, chat, all of those things. So those kind of things where an image evokes an emotion for you is probably the most vital thing. But then, now we're going to a place, the photographer's ego comes in. No, but there's another cheetah in the background. Maybe he should have been looking this direction. And then we start overcritting these things and we diminish the experience. And that to me, and I think that's just not personally, that's a whole different road. But as Wild Eye, the idea of not moving away from photography, but including more experiences. Mm. That's what it's about. Because those people who were with you on that, they still remember that story, whatever images they got. And that's what it's about. That's what it should be.
No, you're very right. I think it's such a sad thing to be, for example, in the middle of the Masai Mara, and you're so upset with the shot that you didn't get, but you forget where you are. It doesn't matter if you've been there 20 times or 30 times. It's remember where you are. And there's so many people that want to be there but can't be there. And you are in the lucky position to be there right there. So enjoy it and take it in. And if that line walks past you, sometimes that line's going to get too close for you to get that shot. And anyway, so put your camera
stop
away
trying.
And just listen to that line breathe as it walks past you. Even close your eyes if you don't want to see it. Just listen then. Use your senses. I think like people that become too serious start not using their senses. And I think that's what nature is all about, is to actually unlock your senses. Use what you have to enjoy and be present in that experience.
Mm. It needs to be a multi-layered thing.
Mm.
We've had people on safari, and look, we've been doing this for a very long time, where they'll come back for an amazing game drive, like lions, leopards, but they didn't really do what we wanted to do photographically, so it hasn't been a great day. Like, wait, what? you just step back, like you say, just look at where you are. A little bit of gratitude, first of all, which will make it a lot nicer experience, but it's just, and then what happens sometimes, and the lion walking past the vehicle is one example. Another example would be like the Great Migration, when the wildebeest almost go, then they stop, almost go. Then they start going. And sometimes, I think my longest one, if I remember, was about 2.5-3 hours. Like to the point where we left and the things were still crossing. This is many years ago. But when you say to someone, they get there, it's their first ever crossing, and they are pumped, man. They are jacked, ready to go. First wildebeest go in, and they just go, grrr. They keep going, grrr, change memory card, grrr. And you say to them, listen, Don, just put your camera down for a second. And then they look at you like you want to eat their children. Like, relax. Seriously. You can only photograph well the things you truly love and appreciate. So love and appreciate this and see what it's about. Because once you see it, you'll know what you're attracted to. Next time you'll photograph that better. It's just the idea where we're stuck behind a camera. And it's this whole thing about a camera teaches you to see, or a camera and photography teaches you to see without a camera, because you appreciate the subtle nuances of the light or the this and that. But too many people get stuck behind the camera when, if they trust us enough, and I say, listen, don't shoot now. There really are no great shots.
Mm.
Just be. Yeah. Just be in the moment. It's huge.
Yeah, it's massive.
It's huge. Can you remember your first ever photograph, wildlife, that you thought, damn, I'm good?
It's actually super embarrassing, but yeah, I thought to myself, yo, I'm gonna post this and I'm gonna have a million likes and views, and so I think I got 4 or 5 likes.
Nice.
But anyway,
like wife, mom, sister.
Yes, I think most of them are family, to be honest with you. No, it was I remember it was actually on a self-driving Kruger, and again, I remember the sighting more than the photo, but I'm glad I got the photo. It's an okay one.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we drove on this road, and there was, we had news from a vehicle that drove past that there was a leopard in this area, but it's sort of gone off the road. And obviously no off-roading in Kruger, so the leopard was sort of gone. And eventually It was us in a small car ahead of, in front of us, and then the leopard was sitting right next to the road, and that vehicle just drove past. I'm sure they just looked on the in the wrong direction at the wrong time. So they just drove straight past the leopard. And I was trying to sort of flash my lights to sort of get their attention, like, come, it's right here. Because it was literally sitting right next to the road, but like a statue, so just sitting very still. But we saw it, and then we were the only vehicle there, because that vehicle just disappeared off in the distance. And it was with that old point and prey camera, to be honest with you. And actually, I remember I got this nice, this leopard was just sitting on a mound perfectly with nothing in the background. Oh. It was just actually so nice. So I would say that was probably my first photo that I was kind of proud of.
Do you still have it?
I still have it.
You should post it.
Maybe I should post it,
See if we can get you more than 4 likes.
Let's see. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, there's good old days where, and it's a funny thing with a progression, is you start off and you get one or two shots like that. They might suck, but for you at the time, it's great. And then you start, I think it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, where you suddenly overrate your skills dramatically. And then you have to learn more to understand that, okay, now I'm actually only growing. It's an interesting thing. It's part of the deal, though.
No, sure.
Destinations on your bucket list. Oh. Give me two. The one where you would like to host trips, anything from Wild Eye or otherwise, and also on your own. Where are the places you want to travel to still?
Hosting... there's one place in particular that comes straight to mind, and that's Zambia. I've always wanted to go to Zambia. I've watched so many documentaries about Zambia, especially South Luangwa and Lower Zambezi. So I would love to see that also from a photographic. I mean, Lower Zambezi, you can't beat that. It's just unbelievably beautiful, is from what I've heard. So I would love to see that, and then also to host safaris, in Kenya. It's just something I haven't seen yet. I mean, I've sold so many safaris there, and I've gotten guest feedback that they absolutely love it there. So I want to go find out for myself. So I'm very excited for Kenya, but all over Kenya, not just Masai Mara, but Amboseli.
It's a special country. Hey?
Yeah, I'm sure.
It really is. What do you do when you're not working?
I enjoy exercise, so training. And then family is a big part of my life as well. So
you guys haven't moved yet?
No, we're still in the process of moving from Pretoria to Johannesburg. My wife works from home, so it is quite nice when I get home, she's there, and we spend a bit of time together, which is something we didn't do when I was still a lodge-based guide. So
yeah,
it's nice to sort of catch up, you know, on lost time.
Mm.
And then also, I do love sport, like actually a bit addicted to sport. So nice. I play quite a bit of golf, and I also, whenever I can watch a local rugby game or cricket game, I'm there.
What handicap are you shooting off?
Oh, no, that's embarrassing. Don't ask me that.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, I probably play off of a 14, so it's not the
not
best,
bad.
But it's not bad, but it's not the best.
I mean, if you're a lodge-based guide and you're playing off a 14, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
My
local club still, to this day, is where I'm a member, is Skukuza Golf Club.
So oh, wow.
That's in the Kruger National Park, for those who don't know. Literally, there's no fences around this golf course. It's insane, actually, to go play.
Every once in a while, there's some pretty cool images from there, like a crocodile walking across the green or hippos off where your ball went in and stuff. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool,
From a future with Wild Eye point of view, where do you want to take this? What's your plan?
Run
a few trips and leave, or what are we looking at?
No, I wouldn't say so.
I hope not.
Like I said, what I really enjoy is the culture in the office so far. Yes, it's only been a week, but I've gotten pretty good over the years, maybe because you're a guide and you meet new people every 3 days, but I've gotten quite good over the years in reading people and getting here, seeing the real deep connection and care with the employees of Wild Eye in the office especially. It's I want to be part of it, and I'm actually excited to be part of it. So then why leave? You know what I mean? So I'm very excited to see what happens. Yes, traveling. That's one of the reasons why I left where I previously worked, is to start traveling. But I think in 3 years, I can see myself still traveling quite a bit, but then also hopefully helping the brand of Wild Eye grow. So whatever that means, is it in the sales direction or is it in the marketing direction? Who knows what? But I can see myself sticking with Wild Eye because of the people that work here. And I think, and that's the most important part, I guess.
Very cool. Last question to everybody listening. So there's normally people that listen to this that have traveled with us. Some people just find us. Why should someone travel with Donovan when they choose a safari?
There's two words that describe me best, and that's passionate and enthusiastic. So I'm so passionate about a lot of things, but wildlife is my greatest passion. So I would hopefully share that passion with you, and hopefully you would feel something then too. And if I'm who's been on safari so many times still gets so excited about something, then maybe it's a good reason for you to get excited as well.
Yeah.
Especially, I can imagine, like, I know Mike Lopesher and then recently saw a caracal on safari. And I mean, if I would see that, I would absolutely lose my mind. So that is a good reason too. And also because I think I bring something different. Like I said, like you, Jerry, I want people to enjoy where they are. And if I could sort of facilitate that, to sort of help people sometimes put that camera down, by all means, get that shot. But once you've gotten that shot, put that camera down and enjoy. And I think that's the sort of role I want to play. So I would really want people to appreciate where they are. And I want to sort of find the way how to do that. And that's why I would want people to travel with me, is to really, my goal will be for you to come on this trip, but more than that, create a lifetime memory. And that's why I want people to travel with me.
Good answer. Where can people get hold of you? Instagram, email, what's the details?
Yeah, so my Instagram handle, as you mentioned earlier, is Donovan Cross with four S's at the end. And
really? I didn't see that. Yeah, four S's?
Four S's at the end.
Was the other one taken?
The other one was taken. There's apparently another Donovan Cross out there.
Ah, it's a traitor. All right.
And then my email is donovan@wildeye.com.
Fantastic. Proud to have you on the team, man. Look forward to the journey. Thank you so much. Guys, if you have any questions for Don, fire them through. You've got his email address. Make sure to follow on Instagram. And yeah, book a trip. He's only traveling in July for the first time, but available for privates before then. So get in touch. Don, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jira. I appreciate it.
Good stuff. And there you have it. If you have any questions, please do get in touch. Just as a reminder, donovan@wildeye.com or Donovan Cross with four S's on Instagram. And yeah, just an amazing guy all around. Great vibe, great energy, and no doubt going to be a great part of the Wild Eye team. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for lending me your ears. I'll chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Bye for now.